You're listening to C2Y Podcast. We bring you discussions on child and youth care that feature conversations with young people, parents, and professionals about the youth social service system. Introducing your host, Wolfgang Vachon.
Welcome to C2Y Podcast, discussions on child and youth care. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. Today's episode is the first time we have a return guest on the podcast. In November of 2013, I spoke with Dr. Ziggy Schuler about adolescents who sexually offend. Several months ago, Dr. Schuler asked me if I'd be open to doing an episode on working with males in a more general sense. I was somewhat reticent initially. I worried about presenting a message that there's not enough focus specifically on boys and men in our culture. Dr. Schuler is concerned that our focus on males is not supporting them in a healthy way. He thinks different genders need different approaches. Today, we're going to talk about unique approaches to support males. Dr. Schuler is a PhD and a registered clinical social worker. He has a particular focus and interest in men's emotional health and well-being from adolescence to adulthood, addressing such areas as childhood trauma, sexual violence, mental health, chemical dependency and pornography addictions, relationship and intimacy concerns, father-son, father-daughter dynamics, and fathering in general. Welcome back to C2Y Podcast, Ziggy.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. I'm looking forward to our conversation. Let's start with the question I alluded to in the introduction. Why is it important to have a discussion specifically focused on working with males?
I think right now there's a lot that's going on in terms of, you know, looking at boys in the school systems, and we certainly, you know, through history, there's a lot that has been discussed about men and violence and men in relationships. And so I think, you know, having a continuous conversation or having a conversation around what is it that we're doing in society, in some of our work with men and women, that looks at whether or not we should be doing things differently. And certainly when we look at sort of the educational system, there's been a lot that's been happening, as I was saying, that, you know, do boys and girls learn differently, and do the way in which we prescribe educational curriculum, does that need to roll out differently for boys and girls in terms of how they manage in the classroom, how they behave, how they take in information? So, I mean, the conversation is certainly happening in different forms, but also in my work, I know that, and being a father of three, you know, with two boys and a daughter, I know that having conversations with my boys, but obviously with my daughter as well, just around emotions and managing behaviors differently, I think is important to me as a father, but I know it's an important piece in terms of society. And I think we all want men to be different human beings and how they interact with others, particularly how it, you know, plays out in their interactions with others and their involvement in families and community and sort of the reduction of violence.
Do you think that the ways most men in our culture interact relationally is, I mean, leaving apart violence, which we can all agree is incredibly problematic, and we'll talk more about violence in a moment, would you say in general that the way males relate in our culture is problematic?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we think about just, you know, if we go back to emotions and men, and we just think about emotions in general, when we think about, you know, the idea of emotional regulation and what is that, you know, and most of us know that when we, you know, we learn about emotional regulation in early in life, in infancy, in terms of the attachments that we have with our parents, particularly mothers. And that, you know, what unfolds is helping kids, you know, essentially learn how to regulate emotions. But I think what ends up happening is that the way in which we teach girls to regulate and I think the way in which we teach boys is quite different. And we see that in many areas of life. We know that there's a lot of the stereotypes about boys being tough and toughening up and not that it's not okay for them to cry, and we see it in sports in terms of walking it off when they fall, and we see that they're emotional, but we don't necessarily give them permission to express that emotion. We see that very early in life and in different areas of life as well. Whereas I think we give girls much better permission to, and sometimes it's a bit of a stereotype, but we certainly typecast girls more so into the place of allowing them to be emotional. And then sometimes that has, sort of other consequences as well, but that there are these differences between boys and girls. And I think what ends up happening is that we start to raise generations of men who aren't able to express themselves emotionally for a variety of different reasons, stemming from different experiences in life. And then when we think about, their relationships and sort of their ability to interact in various relationships, and when I do some couple work with adult men, that some of the biggest complaints, both from men as the client and from the partners of men, is that men aren't emotional in the relationship. And I think that raises issues in terms of relational satisfaction and how men then start to express themselves in relationships.
I'm intrigued with this idea that how males express emotions are somehow limiting. And I'm not saying they're not limiting. I'd like to explore it a little bit. And what I mean by that is talking about feelings and crying necessarily the best way to express emotions? Might, and I'm throwing this out there as a big might, as a question, might yelling and screaming and being aggressive, might that not also be a acceptable way to express emotions? If we as a culture said, it's okay to yell and scream and to be upset and angry, and we don't need to necessarily express emotions in the same way as males and females because of biology, for example, because of hormonal changes, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some ways we're yelling and screaming and stomping away, I think is an expression of emotions. And I think that's, you're raising an important topic now around how do boys express their emotions. So it's, and I think, so there are two things. One is that I think that boys and girls, but that boys are typecast often in a place of, not sharing emotions. So, the natural inclination when you fall and you get hurt, you might cry, is, typically seen as not a great thing for boys in a variety of different venues, not always. And there's certainly change that's happening. And there's lots of parents that, really want their boys to be more emotional. The other thing, the other part to that then is, do boys, when they are expressing emotions, are they expressing it differently? And I would say yes, that I think it doesn't mean that there isn't overlap that girls sometimes express in a similar way as boys and vice versa. But I think what you will find is, and there's enough written on it as well, that boys tend to say fewer words when it comes to emotional expression. So they express themselves, when they do express themselves, they use fewer words and fewer descriptors in getting their point across. And the other, they're going to use behaviors more often as well. So it's not unusual for a boy who is relatively, emotionally healthy, who will still, do the stomping away, who will show more aggression, who might do more door slamming, who might do, more yelling, but that still is within, the more normative range for boys and likely more typical for boys than girls. And so when I work with parents or sometimes in, you know, in group home settings or in educational settings, is it's helping professionals also understand that when a boy is angry, that you may actually see some more behaviors first, and then you might see something else later in terms of a boy being able to, through words, express what's actually happening for them. So behaviors, I think, does become part of how boys in their sort of DNA express emotions. But it's helping boys to also go beyond that, that it's not that that's where they're limited to, that it's only through aggression or only through yelling and use of force that boys get their emotions out, and that they're limited to in terms of the kind of emotions that they can express. So lots of boys that I will work with will often say that, you know, what I tend to show first is anger versus anything else, because anger for me as the boy, you know, has two purposes. One, it sort of keeps people away, because if I'm really angry, then nobody gets to see the tougher feelings like sad, lonely, hurt, and that kind of thing. And anger is also a way for them to blow off the steam and not have to address the tougher feelings that they tend to have below the surface.
I think you articulate that very, very well. Males, boys in particular, can express these big feelings. They manifest themselves in behaviors. And then as service providers or child and youth care practitioners, it's about creating a safe space for that expression, because frequently we'll punish people who are behaving in that way. We'll say that's not acceptable, it's not appropriate. So recognizing that as part of a continuum of emotional expression, and then how do we build from that? So how do we build from that? How do we allow young men to manifest their feelings in behaviors, whether that be screaming or crying or wanting to be by themselves? And then how do we transition from that initial behavioral manifestation into other venues or other means of expressing emotions?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think the starting place is having a conversation, and it's recognizing that.
Having a conversation between the service provider and the young guy.
That, and I think in a broader sense as well, that you know, like we're having on this podcast, is that it's having the conversation that the importance of emotional expression, both for boys and girls, but that, you know, because we're talking about boys, and I think most people would agree that through history, that we've had that we don't necessarily give the same, or we have different expectations for boys in terms of emotional expression, but having the conversation that, hey, I think we need to look at how boys express themselves and what is it that boys need, I think is the starting point. But it's, I think, between service, when we're looking at between service providers and the client or the boys, it's really acknowledging that boys and girls are expressing themselves differently, and it's creating some space where boys, when there is an issue, that boys will initially, not in all cases necessarily, but that many boys will initially need to have more of a behavioral response. And then, of course, there are degrees of what is appropriate and what's not appropriate, but it's recognizing that there may be a behavioral response to their initial reaction, and that boys tend to take more time to express themselves through words that helps us understand what they're feeling. So it's being able to create that safe space in our schools, within our homes, within the community, within, you know, the child welfare system, wherever we may be interacting with boys, that it's creating that space and that recognition. And then it's also about, and I would imagine that for many boys who are entering, you know, quote unquote, the system, whether it be child welfare or the criminal justice system, that many of these boys are also boys that don't know emotional expression. But the only mechanism, venue, or avenue that they have in terms of emotional expression is through behaviors that, you know, quite often becomes violent towards others and themselves. And so it's about providing that education and that skill building that helps them move away from pure behavioral expression to being able to use words and express themselves differently in safer, nonviolent ways.
And are there specific ways we can build those skills of young people towards the emotional regulation that many of them may not have developed as infants and toddlers?
Yes. I mean, I think it's recognizing, and recently I did it's recognizing the importance of that. But recently I did a presentation for a private school, and we actually had this conversation about, you know, if we're recognizing the importance of having boys express themselves emotionally and how that is to the benefit of their mental health and, you know, their interactions with others and reducing violence and reducing, you know, behavioral problems and mental health, that if we can recognize that that's important, then I think it's also about, you know, the onus on the system, particularly the men, I think, who are interacting with boys, that, you know, what is it that they're modeling? And some of the teachers in this particular presentation were able to really acknowledge that, and they hadn't actually considered it, I think they considered it, but they hadn't really put a lot of thought to it, that, you know, they, one gentleman had talked about, you know, sort of the boy code or the bro code, that it's easy sometimes for young adult men to try to relate to, you know, to boys or young men, their students, to sort of, you know, interact with them, I guess, on a more, you know, personal level, and that it's easy to sort of fall into perpetuating some of the problems that we see with young men and men, that you know, you may say, you know, inappropriate things about women, or you may, you know, inadvertently say things that suggest that doing negative behaviors is okay, or that drug use is okay, you know, all of those sorts of things. That some of these male teachers sort of recognize that, hey, it's really about us sending a different kind of message, that, you know, the importance of healthy relationships, the importance of emotional expression, the importance of really walking the talk around what does it mean to be a healthy male in lots of aspects. So I think the modeling piece is a really important part, but it's also creating opportunities for boys where they can also, you know, be in, you know, things like sports or extracurricular activities where, you know, violence is not necessarily a thing that is celebrated, that, you know, being able to be in community activities that doesn't promote that, but promotes other, you know, healthy options for boys around emotional expression and behaviors.
So a couple things I want to pick up on there. The first one is, I'm intrigued, and I'm reflecting on my own interactions with young boys, you know, 2 to 6, 2 to 8, and then adolescent boys. Where do you think the impulse comes from as an adult male to fall into these patterns of behavior with young males?
The negative patterns of behavior.
The patterns, yeah. Of, you know, sexist comments potentially. You know, I think of myself, I tend to get quite physical with young boys when I'm, you know, hanging out with 3 to 6, 7, 8 year olds. A lot of very physical behaviors, a lot of roughhousing behaviors. And I wonder, am I perpetuating something? Am I falling into stereotypical behaviors with them? Yeah, so these sorts of behaviors.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say that some of it is okay, and I think I've read a number of books and literature on the importance of, you know, particularly fathers to be able to roughhouse with their kids and particularly boys. But, you know, what's important in there is that it's, you know, the fathers also being able to model the limit setting that, you know, part of the, I think the developmental task there is that that fathers, when roughhousing or adult male role models for younger kids, that it's about restraining the physical piece of it, that there's a point where roughhousing becomes hurtful. And that, you know, for the adult male role model, the male caregiver, the father, that it's really about setting those limits and stopping the play when it becomes, you know, hurtful in some sort of way, and that being able to express that. So I think, you know, roughhousing is okay, but it's about the task in there is about teaching boys that there are limits to how we use our, you know, our bodies and our physical force and that kind of thing.
It's good, but I quite like it. So I'd hate to think I'd have to stop roughhousing with young guys.
And I think boys need it, right? I think I think girls as well, but I think boys need it in terms of the need for the physicalness of it all. And there's a bonding piece there as well that I think is really important for kids between fathers and kids and or adult role models and kids. But I think where we fall into some of those negative behaviors, I think sometimes comes from the place of the adult or the caregiver and their own histories of not having had great role models around what does it mean to be an adult role model to this particular child or adolescent. And I think it's also, you know, it's hard to also determine, I guess, how do we connect with boys? And I think sometimes we think that connecting through those same kinds of behaviors, that somehow that adolescent or that child is going to see us as being someone that is cool, that understands them, that can meet them, you know, where they're at, those kinds of things. And I challenge that all the time when I work with staff in group homes or in educational systems, that I think what boys need more often is not someone who's going to be their friend or who's going to be able to relate to them at that level, but someone that can actually guide them and guide them to be what it means to be a healthy and quote-unquote real male. And I think when we think about that, I think that we have, you know, again, generations of men, and I think we have lots of boys out there that are hungry for some direction on what does it actually mean to be a male and a healthy adult male. We don't actually have clear markers in sort of Western society around, you know, the transition between boys to men. And, you know, we have some of those, you know, stereotypical things around, you know, driving and drinking age and voting. But, you know, girls have those as well. And you know, those aren't necessarily any different than for both genders. But they don't do a lot in terms of really helping boys understand that that now I've moved into adulthood or into becoming a young man because of, you know, particular character traits that I might have or something that I have done that really signifies that, you know, I can take responsibility, that, you know, I've created a path for myself that respects others, that I've become to understand myself, those kinds of things. I think for kids in general, we don't have a very good, you know, way in the Western culture around that really helps kids move from childhood to adulthood. But I think for boys in particular, we don't have good markers. And so what we say is, you know, amongst boys, we say that, you know, that if they can drink a lot, or, you know, if they sometimes have interactions with the law, or if they, you know, win a physical fight, that somehow, or how many quote unquote girls that they can get, that somehow these are the true markers of what it means to be a man. And I have many teenage boys that, you know, once you really are able to uncover some of that kind of stuff, they acknowledge, they talk about how difficult it is for them to find their way, and that there aren't things that they can really latch on to that makes them be, you know, healthy, true young men.
We've talked a lot about working with young men from the perspective as a male, which is natural since both of us identify as males. We also know that the vast majority of service providers are not males. And when we look at, you know, group home staff, child and youth work staff, counselors, et cetera, the vast majority are females. How should females work with young men to support this healthy development, emotional regulation, being an emotionally healthy male?
I mean, first of all, I work with a lot of female colleagues that have taught me a lot, as well as a practitioner, and who do wonderful work with boys and young men. But I think, and I've had this conversation with my female colleagues, is that many of them would acknowledge that there are aspects of working with boys that is particularly difficult for the female practitioner. And I think that would be true for, you know, a male with a female client. And, you know, and some of those are some of the obvious topics in terms of, you know, sexuality and intimacy and romantic relationships and, you know, sometimes trauma, those kinds of areas. But I think, I want to make sure that clear is that it's not about not having females work with males and vice versa. And I think there's a lot of benefit to having the opposite gender relationship, a therapeutic relationship or working relationship, because I think it can also have lots of corrective experiences as well. And I've had many female colleagues say to me as a male that I think you should work with this female client because this particular female client has had a lot of abusive relationships in their life by males. And having an opportunity to work with a male practitioner, you know, creates a corrective experience that not all men are violent and that men can have, that can be sensitive, nurturing, supportive, those kinds of things. And the same is true for, you know, for my female colleagues with male clients. But I think, again, it's about this recognition that, you know, how do we, you know, do we work differently? I think it's about having some different kind of understanding that you know, how do we interpret some of the behaviors that the boys and young men show when we're working in a therapeutic kind of relationship, whether it be in a therapy session or within the context of a residential milieu, that, you know, boys are going to use fewer words. They're going to show aggression more than they're going to talk about their feelings. That they're going to be loaded probably with a lot of stereotypes about what women can do in regards to their support of men. You know, lots of boys have had also negative interactions with females, whether it be with their mothers or other female individuals. So it's about that corrective experience, but also that some females may be a trigger for some boys. So it's about having some recognition around that, and that it's about creating the space and some allowance around boys taking time around their trust and being able to open up in a different kind of way, and that how we approach the therapy session or the therapeutic interaction may need to be curtailed as well. That direct conversations don't always work so well with boys. That, you know, sometimes it's finding other avenues that get boys talking, whether it be through writing, through media, through role plays, through, and some, for some boys, you know, it may need to be through, you know, wilderness experiences or out of bound kind of experiences that we see popping up as well around, you know, sort of therapeutic milieus that offer that kind of experience. Or it's through the doing, and I talk to a lot of parents that, you know, again, avoiding sometimes direct conversations where you're sitting in front of a boy face to face and having that eye to eye contact, that sometimes the best conversations between parent and son is to go take a drive or to go for a walk. Or, you know, when I worked in secure custody settings, that, you know, some of the best interactions was through sports. And that conversations unfolded through the doing versus, you know, the sort of idle sitting. And that boys tend to be open to that kind of interaction.
When I look around the classrooms that I teach, I'm continually struck by the lack of males. And it seems to me that's probably quite indicative of all the things we've been talking about up to this point and how we understand maleness in our culture and what is appropriate employment for males, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you for suggesting this topic of conversation. I think it was a rich conversation. I appreciate it. And I think it's a conversation that needs to happen and wouldn't have happened had you not encouraged me to do it. So I appreciate your time today, Ziggy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
This concludes this month's episode of C2Y Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher and visit us at c2ypodcast.org.